What's up, Revision Online? My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm pumped that you're tuned in this morning from wherever you are. I also hope you're ready for a fun Christmas season, even if it's unlike any Christmas season we've ever experienced before. So this Monday morning, I was driving to the Y at like 5:30, and I turned on the radio, and sure enough, Christmas music was playing because it's after Thanksgiving, and one song came on in particular that reminded me of the night of August 17th, 2009. I can still picture that night very vividly, and I remember three specific things that went through my head as I watched Jenny go into labor with our first kid. My first thought, and this is the one that probably was the main thing I spent most of my time and energy on that night, was, I am so cold. Why are hospitals so cold? I should have brought a hoodie or a jacket or something. It's freezing. I'm going to have to go to the mall next door to buy a sweatshirt. I got to be the most uncomfortable person in here. Thought number two was, Jenny sure seems like she's a close second in terms of discomfort. This does not look or sound like it's a lot of fun on her end. And you know what? It's possible she's tougher than me. And thought number three was, that song Silent Night is a lie. I don't think there was anything silent about the first Christmas at all. Now, to be fair, I'd had a sneaky suspicion for a long time that Silent Night was wrong. I didn't grow up on a farm, but I'd been to the state fair and living history farm, so I knew barns could be noisy. And then, you know, you had the whole unwed teenage mother giving birth for the first time to a baby on a suicide mission to save the world thing. And on August 17th and 18th of 2009, I learned birth is definitely not a silent process. And not only that, but as all of this was going down, angels exploded in praise on a starlit hillside while the very foundations of hell shook at the sound of that baby's first cry, because the enemy knew it was a battle cry from the Prince of Peace announcing loudly that he had arrived to take back the territory where darkness and division reigned supreme. Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. Nope. Not silent, not calm, not at all. It's kind of like our world right now. There hasn't been a whole lot of silence or calm to 2020. It feels like we're surrounded by chaos, division, hatred, confusion, disease, frustration, darkness, hopelessness, and more. And in the middle of all that, after all we've missed out on, we find ourselves in this unique holiday season that's different in so many ways than we wish it was, than it's ever been before. And if you're anything like me, you found yourself lamenting over some of the things we've lost in all this. Big stuff, like lives, most importantly. Also health, jobs, security, comfort, community, school, and more. And smaller stuff too, like Christmas Eve services. We're doing Christmas services online only this year, and I'm actually super excited about what our team at Revision is putting together. It's going to be a really fun, unique Christmas Eve experience. But I miss getting together with all you guys in person on Sundays and in house groups. I miss seeing everybody every week. And this Christmas Eve, I'm going to miss golf cart sleighs and cookies and cocoa and beach balls and celebrating together. I also look at my life and really miss the days when you could plan more than a week ahead. It's overwhelming sometimes to live in a world where things seem to change at the drop of a hat, where the future is incredibly murky. It's hard to find your way forward in the chaos and the darkness. But here's what I want all of us to realize this Christmas. The fact that our lives are not silent right now doesn't mean they're not holy. And everything doesn't have to be calm for all to be bright. We're kicking off a brand new series of messages for the Christmas season this morning called All is Bright. Because here's what I believe. Actually, scratch that. Here's what I know and what I want all of us to know this Christmas. There may be turmoil and gloom everywhere we turn. But all is bright. The future is filled with hope because God is with us. You guys, the moment Jesus stepped out of eternity and crashed into history, light exploded into the darkness of our world, because that's who Jesus is. In John chapter 8, verse 12, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Now that truth about Jesus' identity is actually going to be the foundation that guides us through this series. But if we're going to understand the fullness of what he meant when he said that, we got to recognize that he didn't just make that statement out of the blue. He didn't come up with it on the spot. He was actually quoting something that was written about him by the prophet Isaiah 700 years before he was born. And in John 8, the religious authorities who heard Jesus say this got really angry at him because they knew he was pointing them back to the words of Isaiah 9, which described God's promised Messiah. So if you have a Bible or a Bible handy, you can crack it open to Isaiah 9. It's almost smack dab in the middle of the book. If you don't have one, Hakuna Matata. We're going to throw the words up on the screen for you. And if you need a Bible, please let us know on your digital connection card and we will mail you one, because we believe that the stories in this book will give you a bigger, better vision, a revision of who God is and who he created you to be. So we'd love to get one in your hands. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to take like an Inception style look at John 8:12. We're going to get to the bottom of what it means for us in the darkness of 2020 that Jesus is the light of the world by following his words down the rabbit hole to Isaiah 9, which is actually going to lead down another rabbit hole. It'll be fun. So Isaiah 9, it says this: "Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who are in distress. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned." I love those verses so much because they're a powerful reminder that Christmas teaches us how to deal with the dark. Christmas teaches us how to deal with the dark. And let's be real, the dark is scary. I don't know how many of you are afraid of the dark or were growing up, but I'll be vulnerable for a minute and admit something I'm a little bit humiliated by. When I was growing up, I was super afraid of the dark. I hated going to our basement alone so much that I can't even tell you how many times I tripped up the stairs because after I turned off the lights, I caught my feet trying to sprint up from the basement. It was so many times. Unfortunately, I can tell you the last time I tripped up the stairs doing that. It was 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I still have a bruise on my shin, like right there. Just another proud, amazing moment in the life of Mike. I was home alone. I went to the basement to feed my kids fish, and as I turned out the light, I heard a weird noise, so I just booked it up the stairs, or halfway up until I tripped and hurt myself. In fairness, as an adult, I wasn't thinking, it must be a robber, but if I can outrun him, maybe he'll kidnap one of my siblings instead. I was thinking, bat, it's another bat, bat, I gotta go get my bucket and my tennis racket. Well, either way, I didn't exactly cover myself in glory, but I did think back to how scared of the dark I was as a kid. And also how much I loved Christmas, because Christmas was different than the rest of the year. In every room, there were lights. Lights on the garland lining the stairway, lights in the hallway, lights on the tree, lights in the basement, lights on our house and all the houses around us. Indoors and outdoors, it's never as dark at Christmas. And as I sat on the stairs holding my shin, feeling a great deal of shame and self-pity a couple weeks ago, I couldn't help but think about what a cool metaphor all those lights are for the fact that Christmas, just like Isaiah told us almost 3,000 years ago, is something that brings light to our darkness in a way that allows us to live without fear, even though we live in what Isaiah calls the land of the shadow of death, or in some translations, the land of deep darkness. It's interesting, the Hebrew word that's being translated there is salmaveth. It literally means death darkness. I think Isaiah uses salmaveth here to remind us that death casts a dark shadow over every human being on this planet. And if ever that was in doubt, or in case any of us have forgotten it, the realities of the coronavirus pandemic over the last 10 months have been an unavoidable wake-up call that it's true. But honestly, I don't think that's a reminder most of us needed. We know. The majority of social scientists now agree that we live in a civilization that is more haunted by death than any civilization that's ever existed in the history of the world. And you may sit there and think, well, how can that be? We have all these advances in technology. We live way longer than anyone's ever lived before us. And that's true, but all of our advances have actually removed us from death. Like back in the day when your loved one died, they died in a room in your house. And then you took the body and buried it out back on the farm. Today, we don't see death. We don't deal with death. We do our best to not even think about death. But no matter how far we remove it from our daily realities, the death rate hasn't actually changed at all. It's still one per person. It turns out dying is actually the only thing in life you have to do. And our society is so terribly, awfully terrified of it. Because the modern Western world is the first society to have decided, by and large, that there is nothing after death. And so we're desperate to cram all of the enjoyment and love and pleasure and power and accumulation we possibly can into this life, because we've been told to place our hope in the idea that those things can give us meaning. And for what it's worth, I think the honest atheists out there, Nietzsche, Camus, and a whole bunch of others, are right when they say, if there's no life beyond this one, then there's no real meaning to be found in this one. It's all just absurd. Epicurus said the same thing 2,300 years ago when he wrote, what people fear most about death is not that maybe death is annihilation. It is maybe that death is not. But for us, just in case death is the end, our world scrambles for pleasure and power, stuff and success, control and comfort. We live utterly frantic lives in the shadow of this death darkness, and we trample those around us in the process. And I think our fear of that darkness is the root cause behind all of the evil that makes our world such a shattered place. The hatred, violence, division, vitriol, oppression, and isolation. It's the reason so many people our lives crash into every day, physically and digitally in 2020, are feeling completely helpless and hopeless. What do we do with that? How do we deal with the darkness in our own lives and in the lives of the people around us? I don't know about you guys, but there's part of me that's compelled to do something. But there's also another part of me that says, what would you even do? Mike, you can't possibly make a difference. The problems are too big. The pain is too powerful. The darkness is too dark. You can't even handle the brokenness in your own life, let alone anybody else's. And I actually think every single one of us on one level or another struggles with some version of those thoughts. We go, I can't. I can't do anything that matters. I can't drive back the darkness. I'm not smart enough. I'm not experienced enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm not spiritual enough. I haven't been walking with Jesus long enough, and I don't know enough about the Bible. Or we think, I'm not powerful enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm not old enough. I'm not young enough. I'm not courageous enough. And whatever it is for you, my guess is that most of us don't have to think too long to be able to say, oh yeah, here's the struggle I have. This is the I am not enoughism that cripples me. And if you're tuned in this morning and you can't think of a single one, I'll help you out. I'll give you one because I'm generous like that. I'm a giver. You are probably not humble enough to make a difference. You're welcome. But seriously, it's so easy to look out at the depth of the darkness and find ourselves paralyzed by fear, believing the world is scary, the people around me are distressed, and there's nothing I can do. You know, earlier I said Isaiah 9 reminds us that Christmas teaches us how to deal with the dark. So how? Well, the answer is actually found a couple verses after the ones we just looked at. In verse 4, Isaiah writes, "For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you've shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle, every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born. To us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end." It was a classic Christmas passage that all of you who grew up in or around church have probably heard before. Isaiah's going, check it out. When the Messiah shows up, this is what it's going to be like. And then in John 8, Jesus arrives on the scene and declares, this is what it's like. I am the light Isaiah was talking about, the light that shines so bright it melts fear as it beats back the shadow of death darkness. That's me. And here's how I do it. Here's what it looks like in your life, you guys. It looks like the day of Midian's defeat. How cool is that? Like four of you right now are going, it's so cool. And everybody else is going, I don't know how cool that is. Maybe it's very cool, but it really depends on what in the world the day of Midian's defeat is. So if that's you, don't feel bad. You're not alone. But if we're going to understand those words that we hear almost every Christmas, if we're going to fully grasp what it means for us that Jesus says in John 8, he's the light of the world. And if we're going to learn how to deal with the darkness, then we need to know what it means that Jesus shatters our burdens and shines in our world as in the day of Midian's defeat. And so let's head down a second rabbit hole. We hit rewind 700 years from John 8 to Isaiah 9. Now we're going to rewind another 450 years from Isaiah 9 to Judges 6 and 7, where we learn about the day of Midian's defeat. Now here's what's going down as we hit Judges chapter 6. Israel's ancient enemies, the Midianites, are terrorizing them and stealing their crops and their livestock. They've invaded with a massive army. Israel's basically powerless against them, and a whole bunch of Israelites have been driven into hiding. They're quarantined. But if they come out, they're going to be killed not by a virus, but by their enemy's swords. Things are bad. And that's when we meet a dude named Gideon. In verse 12 of chapter 6, we read that an angel appeared to Gideon while he was threshing wheat in a wine press and said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Now, the irony in these verses is thick, and it's easy to miss because we're not used to threshing wheat or pressing wine. But the big idea behind threshing wheat is to get rid of the chaff, like the useless garbage parts that are no good. And so you toss it up into the wind, and the good, heavy stuff falls back down, and the chaff blows away. It's a process that's meant to be done on a hill. Gideon was doing it in a hole because he was afraid of the Midianites. There wasn't anything mighty about him. And his first response when he heard the angel show up and say, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior," was not, "Sweet, get my battle axe. I'm about to do some damage." It was, "Oh no, there's a mighty warrior around here somewhere. Why?" But God called him a mighty warrior. And even Gideon realized that was a very inaccurate description. He was maybe the least courageous guy he knew. And so he responded very politely. He said, "Pardon me, my lord. If the Lord is really with us, then why is all this bad stuff happened to us? Where are all these wonders that our ancestors told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us. He's given us over into the hand of Midian." You know what I really appreciate about Gideon's response? I think we can relate to it. Because every single one of us has asked that same question in our own way. I mean, most of us have asked it multiple times in multiple ways over the course of 2020. Like, "God, if you're really here, if you're really good, if you're really for me, then why? Like, why is this so hard? Why is life so difficult? Why this pain? Why this suffering? Why this loss? If you're for me, if you love me, why am I beaten down? Why am I hopeless? Where are you at?" That's what Gideon's saying. That's what we've said. And you know what? It doesn't bother God one bit. God looks at Gideon. He says, "Oh, I'm right here. I actually never left. You guys left me. I've been right here the whole time. And now I want to show you that. So I got a mission for you, Gideon. You're going to lead an army that drives the Midianites out of Israel." And Gideon goes, "I can't do that. I'm a nobody. I mean, I'm really a nobody. I'm a nobody among nobodies." And then in verse 16, God looks at him and responds, "Oh man, did you say you're Gideon? I'm sorry, I thought you were Gary. I accidentally came to the wrong house. Never mind any of that stuff I just said." And then God goes over to Gary's house. I'm just kidding. That's not what happened at all. God looks at Gideon and says, "I know who you are, but I don't see the darkness around you through the same lens you do. I don't see you through the same lens you do. I will be with you and you will strike down all the Midianites." And Gideon doesn't believe it. He's still full of fear because he knows the enemy is too big for him. And three different times he asked God for a sign. And God is patient and he keeps showing up. And so finally in chapter 7, Gideon decides to take on this mission. And he rounds up an army. And amazingly enough, about 32,000 soldiers show up to fight. Which would be really cool, except there's about 135,000 Midianites. That's not good odds, right? It's basically 4-1. And I don't know about you guys, but when I'm facing odds that bad, I sometimes pray. When I'm overwhelmed, I feel like there's no possible way I can handle what is in front of me. I take it to God. And I like to imagine that's what Gideon did. He took a look around and he let God know, "Hey, I don't know if you're very good at math, Lord, but this is not gonna work. It's 4-1. You need to do something." And God heard that and he said, "Whew, you're right, Gideon. I got to do something. I cannot deliver Midian into your hands with this army. It's way too big. You know what, Gideon? Tell anybody who's scared they can go home." And Gideon goes, "What? Lord, I think you misunderstood me. I need more people, not less people." And God looks back at him and says, "Yeah, the thing is, I don't want you thinking you did any of this by your own strength. Tell the scared guys to leave." And this is one of the most counterintuitive moments in the entire Bible, but it's so important for us to understand the point. When we're facing darkness and the odds are impossible, our strength can be our weakness because it blinds us to our need for God. Especially in a culture like ours of self-sufficiency, where our first instinct is to go it alone and rely on ourselves. So God tells Gideon to thin the herd, and Gideon does it, and 22,000 men take off. I'm sure Gideon is going, God, did you see that coming? I did not see that coming. Maybe you saw that coming, but it feels like a lot. It feels like a lot. Now the odds are ridiculous. And God looks back at Gideon. He's like, not ridiculous enough. 10,000, still way too many. Take them to the creek. And so Gideon takes him to the creek, and 9,700 of these guys, like normal humans, like drop to their knees and drink out of the creek. But 300 of them, the Bible tells us, cup water in their hands and lick it out like a dog. And God goes, oh, Gideon, the weirdos are the ones we need. Send the 9,700 guys home, keep the weirdos. And Gideon at this point is flabbergasted, but God sees what Gideon does not see. And God's in control. And the beautiful thing is, God never asks Gideon to understand. He just asks him to follow and to hope big. He asks Gideon to trust that he can do what Gideon can't. And he sends him to go spy on the Midianite camp, and Gideon's afraid. And I love that the Bible tells us about Gideon's fear. Because I think so many of us have this idea that fear is the opposite of courage, that they're mutually exclusive to the point where you cannot have both at the same time. But that's a bunch of garbage. It's not true. Next week, we're actually going to talk a little bit about what courage looks like in the Bible. And how you can live with courage even while you're afraid. And so Gideon is filled with fear, but he goes into the camp and he hears these guys talking, saying they're afraid of Gideon. And he realizes, they should not even know who I am. God really is in this. And so he heads back to the camp and he rounds up his 300-man army, and outnumbered 450-1. They use trumpets, jars, and torches to launch a noisy attack out of nowhere. And it confuses and freaks out the 135,000 Midianites. They panic and flee and fight each other. In Judges 7:22, we read, when the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. The army fled to Beth Shitta towards Zerah and as far as the border of Abel-Meholah near Tabith. That is the day of Midian's defeat. Gideon delivered his people because he hoped big in a big God. And despite the fear that welled up inside of him, he followed one step at a time, believing that God could beat back the darkness that he and his tiny band of warriors could not. So let's head back up the rabbit hole to Isaiah 9:4. When the Messiah comes, it'll be like the day of Midian's defeat. The yoke that burdens the people, the rod of their oppressors, will be shattered. So that's Christmas, right? God rescuing us from crushing darkness. But not with a show of power from a giant army. Now, Christmas wasn't that at all. Christmas is the Creator stepping out of glory and into a barn. It's not a show of strength. It's a shedding of strength. It's God emptying himself of power and glory to step into the human story and be with us. As a helpless infant, greeted first not by angels or kings, but by lowly shepherds. Christmas is not a show of strength. It is a shedding of strength. And it's step one on a journey to the cross, where Jesus, who spoke the world into being, would allow himself to be beaten, battered, bruised, and ultimately killed so that you and I could be forgiven and set free as he paid the consequences of our sin and rebellion, not by displaying power, but by demonstrating weakness. That's Christmas. That's how we deal with the dark. God defeated our enemy. Jesus lit up the world in a way that beat back forever the death darkness that cast a shadow over all of humanity. And he did it not with a show of strength, but with a shedding of strength. Not with a display of power, but with a divestment of power, just like the day of Midian's defeat. You guys, a great light has dawned. That's the Christmas story. That's the gospel. That's why all is bright, even though everything isn't calm. There's darkness around us everywhere we look. And so many people are living in fear as the last reservoirs of hope dry up inside of them. And it's so easy to look out at our world and think, I am helpless against this. I cannot handle 2020. It's too heavy for me. There's nothing I can do. I'm not enough. not strong enough, old enough, young enough, smart enough, brave enough. I don't have the answers. I can't deal with it in my own life. I can't possibly make a difference in anyone else's. I know those thoughts. I have had those thoughts. And so here's what I want to leave us with this morning. The beauty of Christmas is that you don't have to do any of that. You don't have to be strong enough to beat back the darkness because Jesus is. All you have to do is what Gideon did. Hope big despite your fears. See, the message of Christmas is that we deal with the dark by simply trusting that God has already dealt with the dark for us. It may be bigger than us, but our God is bigger than it, and he is with us. He's working to make all things new and set all things right, which means, just like Paul tells us in his letter to the Romans chapter 8, our present sufferings, the weight and anxiety we're carrying in 2020 are not even worth comparing to the glory that will be revealed in us. And we can have confidence, big hope that that will happen, because if God is for us, there's nobody who can stand against us and nothing that can separate us from his love. Oh, you guys, when we believe that, it changes everything. Jesus is the light of the world, which means no matter how dark things seem, we don't have to be afraid because they aren't going to stay that way. The death darkness has been defeated by the risen light. And that light, Jesus says, lives in us, in you and me. In John 8, he says, I'm the light of the world. But in Matthew 5:14, he says, you are the light of the world. And I think that's so cool because it's an invitation to be a part of what he's doing in the world. An invitation to join him on a critical mission, just like Gideon's mission, to be an agent of hope and deliverance to the hurting, desperate people around us by letting God's light shine through us, by hoping in him so big that our hope overflows out of us onto the people we crash into as we follow him one step at a time and live lives that demonstrate that everything doesn't have to be calm for all to be bright. Will you guys pray with me? Heavenly Father, thank you so much for stepping in to the shadow of death darkness in which all of us live, for doing for us what none of us could do for ourselves. Thank you for beating back a darkness that we couldn't beat back on our own. Would you just fill us with hope in the middle of a year, in the middle of a season that has felt so hopeless for so many of us? Would you help us to hope big in who you are and remember that we don't have to deal with the darkness because you dealt with it for us? Would you fill us with that hope and that light so that we can walk out into a dark and hurting world and point people toward the hope that they need, toward the light that they need to beat back their darkness, toward you? We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.